Welcome to the first of Bowden Education's spring podcast series with me, Catherine Carden. In this podcast, we like to talk to education experts on a whole range of pertinent topics in education. We talk to those that are making a positive contribution to this field and have something to share that we think you'll learn a lot from and have a benefit from. And today I'm delighted to talk to Toria Bono, and I've been looking forward to talking to Toria for a long time. Toria is a teacher who's passionate about giving children the very best learning experiences that she can and empowering other educators around her. She has had a breadth of experience from class teacher to school leader and now currently working in a large junior school in the southeast of England. Toria teaches year four full time and is also the coaching lead in the school, one of the English champions, and is involved in many working parties to improve teaching across the school. In June 2020, Toria was made a fellow by the Chartered College of Teaching, and she's recently achieved her level five diploma in coaching, and only today was baking Roman bread. So a whole raft of skills and talents, Toria. That summarises your career really briefly, but do you want to tell us a little bit about your career path? Because you've done something not necessarily unusual, but you've gone into leadership and gone back into teaching.
Yeah, so I trained in secondary initially as well. So I trained in secondary, transferred to primary. So I've got two PGCEs. I've got one in secondary and one primary. And then I did multiple different roles in sort of, well, the first 13 odd years of teaching. And then I went into leadership. And then due to health reasons, I was diagnosed with systemic and cutaneous mastocytosis, very long-winded, in 2018. I chose to go back into the classroom because actually, yeah, I love certain aspects of it, but I didn't love other aspects, and I really, really missed teaching children. I wasn't teaching enough, and I wasn't quite sure due to my illness. I'd sort of taken a step back as such, and I was trying to figure out what to do, and I took a maternity post just to see whether or not I wanted to teach full-time again and actually go back into the classroom. And I walked back into the classroom and it was like coming home. I felt so happy to actually be doing something that feels so utterly, utterly natural to me. Leadership I enjoyed, but it didn't feel natural. Teaching, I adore. And as you said, today I get to bake Roman bread. Tomorrow I dress up as a Roman soldier. You know, there are so many amazing things that I absolutely love doing. But alongside all of that, I've always loved, the aspect of leadership I love was developing other teachers, supporting and developing them. And that's why I've done the coaching apprenticeship, because I didn't want to lose that side. That was a really, really important side for me.
What was your, just being completely nosy, what was your secondary subject?
Oh, politics and history. Now, the interesting thing was that when I did the PGCE, I just turned 22. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching A-level history and politics. And I just found that, for me, I found that too challenging. It was really tricky for me. I was teaching Northern Ireland, and over there, the sixth forms are attached to the schools. So I was teaching in schools, but I was teaching from year seven right the way up to A-levels. And it was just, yeah, it was too much for me at the age of 22. And primary, I ended up just feeling at home in primary and able to do things in primary that, yeah, I think, I don't know about you, but I think there's a fit. You know, I am someone that quite likes dressing up as a Roman soldier and baking Roman bread and joining in pantomimes and doing bizarre things like that. And for some reason, primary just was a better fit.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I originally went into FE, and I was about 22 at the time, and I on countless times other members of staff walked into the room and said, "Where's your teacher?" I'd pay them to do that now. But you know, that then, and then I moved into secondary, but then I moved into teacher education originally, and it quite a good fit potentially was a 14 to 19 PGCE with my FE and secondary background. But I ended up leading our primary teacher education. So I sort of gravitated that way. And so probably for the last sort of 7-8 years of my time in teacher education, definitely I was much more aligned with primary. So I think it's really interesting. But however, having moved from teaching FE to secondary to HE and being involved in primary, I still think fundamentally good teaching is really good teaching.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think we need to see ourselves more as one profession rather than a profession in many different sectors, which I think sometimes can happen. I think you've got the early years sector and then you've got the FE sector, and they don't, it's like never the twain shall meet. But actually, good teaching is good teaching. We're fundamentally doing the same thing. We have the same skill set. It just depends who we're in front of. And I think, you know, I would love our profession to have greater unity, I think is probably the best way of putting it.
Yeah, I did for a while run a 7 to 14. I will go back onto the proper questions that I've sent you. Oh, but I think it's really interesting. But I ran for a while a PGC 7 to 14. Mm-hmm. And within that, it was fascinating how students were just getting that to grips with how their practice, they could take things from primary into secondary and secondary back to primary, and doing teaching practice across both was just enabling them, I suppose, to synergize how learning happens. Yeah. And question why suddenly at the age of 11 we suddenly segregate so clearly into different subjects and stop making those links.
Mm-hmm.
How as we move through the education system we move onto far more regimented sort of desks and mm-hmm. lines, and then I always say about how you end up in a lecture theatre, which is really individual and not very conducive to collaborative learning. But I thought though the 7 to 14 is a fascinating PGCE, but I'd also love to see people working FE going into early years. What can you learn vice versa? You know, I think there's a lot of learning to be done that would help children make those transitions through education as well.
I completely agree. And actually, I think, do you know what I would love is I'd love every year six teacher across the land, or every year five, year six, because Upper Key Stage 2 is a really interesting one in primary. Upper Key Stage 2 can often be very divorced from early years. And I think actually they have so much to learn, because what I notice in Upper Key Stage 2 is I notice that they're moving into those rows. I noticed they're moving more into that individual way of learning, and it's less a discursive classroom, etc. And actually, I look at early years and how much our children are talking and communicating and working collaboratively and learning from one another and the power of that learning. And yet, Upper Key Stage 2, in the same school at times, it can be completely different atmosphere, a totally different environment. And it's such a pity, because I really feel that early years, we've got so much to learn from.
Definitely. I definitely agree. So what, having been in education for a number of years, and other than being able to dress up as a Roman, what drives and inspires you to continue to work? Because we hear so many people, don't we, Toria, that are leaving the profession, which is so, so sad. What keeps you going in education?
This is going to sound really sad. It is the making the difference. It is championing those children and allowing children to know that I believe in them. So I want to teach, and I like to teach, you know, children that may find things challenging, you know, and I like children to know that they're able to do something. And I had a horrible time at school myself. I hated school with a passion. Or at least I didn't hate school. I was an invisible child. I think that's the best way of putting it. I was not seen by any teachers. I was just, you know, I sort of blended into the wallpaper. And I don't want any child to feel that way. And I went into teaching so that I could ensure that, this sounds really big headed. I basically became the teacher that I wanted to have. So it's, and I don't mean that in a big headed way, but I basically wanted to teach children in the way that I needed to be taught. And I wanted to see children in the way that I needed to be seen.
Yeah. And, you know, when I've interviewed, and I've interviewed many, many candidates for teacher training courses over the years, and when you ask them why, it generally is one of two responses. One, I want to be like this teacher that was amazing and inspired me, or I want to be the opposite of that teacher that made school horrible for me. Yeah. I didn't thrive because, and I want to go in and make sure other children don't have the same experience that I had. And that's really important. And I think that giving and seeing every child as an individual is just what makes an average teacher into a brilliant teacher. Seeing those little flickers.
Yeah. I've got a word on my desk. It's in gold glitter and it says believe. And I say to the children, you know, this word's here because I want you to know that I believe in you. And so whenever they're doubting themselves, they may not believe in themselves, but they know that I believe in them. And I think that's so important because every child needs to know that at least one person believes in them.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit then, it leads us nicely into your supportive approach, and tell me a little bit about your social media initiative, Tiny Voices Talk.
So I started Tiny Voice Talks back in 2020, and it's had many, 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 many sort of rebirths. It was Tiny Voice Tuesday, Tiny Voice Tuesday Unites. Then I started the podcast, Tiny Voice Talks, and then I renamed the hashtag on Twitter to Tiny Voice Talks. And the idea was, I think often as teachers in the classrooms, as maybe leaders in schools, we don't feel heard. I think teachers in classrooms can potentially feel less heard at times. And I wanted to ensure that there was a space. It was created because I was furious that I wasn't being heard. It was just, I put a question out there on Twitter and no one had answered. And I was like, how is that fair? You know, other people can put questions out there and get 1,000 answers. And I put one question out and no one listens. And I created this Tuesday thread, which was just, the way I put it is, it's rather like, you know, Cheers. It's the place where everyone knows your name on Twitter, and you pop along to the thread and you say, hey, you know, and people there that are going on the thread each week, they know each other. Friendships have been built through the Tiny Voice Talks thread. And I think that's really special. It happened that I created it just prior to COVID. So what it allowed a lot of educators to do who were sitting at home, either virtually teaching or remotely, it allowed them to say, hey, I'm here. And then from that, it's just kept going, actually. You know, it's not as big as it was, you know, at the height of COVID, but actually the thread's there, and it allows new people to come on Twitter, say, hi, this is me, and connect with other educators from actually around the world, which I think is lovely, you know, because I think we can often be quite insular, but actually education is a global phenomenon, people. And I love learning from educators in America and Australia and New Zealand and everywhere across the world. And I've been able to connect with them through Twitter.
Yeah, and I think as well, it's a global phenomenon, but yet teaching I often say this, and people sort of give me a funny look when I do so, but I say teaching can be really lonely, which sounds an odd thing because you're surrounded by people all day. Probably there isn't a profession where you've got so many interactions with people, yet it is lonely sometimes and you feel on your own.
You do. And I think it's sometimes it's difficult because you've got that question that you don't want to ask anyone in school in case they think you're a bit mad. And you're worried about asking anyone on social media in case they also think you're a bit mad. But that's another reason why I love the Tiny Voice Talks thread, because you can put something out on there and you can get a myriad of responses where no one's judging you for not knowing. Because I think the other thing is that educators go into teaching expecting themselves to be really good at teaching, but it's rather like driving a car. You know, it takes time to become really good at it. And also, I think it's scary to have to ask the questions, because I remember when I was an NQT, I had some fabulous people that I was working with, but I was scared of going and asking them a question in case they knew that I didn't know, because I thought I should know everything. But of course, how could I? But for some reason, and I don't know whether this is the same as every profession, for some reason, we feel we should know.
Yeah. Absolutely. I do think that. And that brings me on to my next question. Why do you think it's so important to share the stories and the voices of fellow teaching professionals? Is it about learning? Is it about support?
I think every single person that's teaching a class on a daily basis or leading a school on a daily basis has immense amounts of experience to share. And sometimes we just need to be heard. We need to be heard and valued. As you said, it can be quite isolating. We can go through a whole day. You know, I've told you that I made Roman bread today, but there are occasions where I do all sorts of exciting things and I don't actually, you know, sort of tell anyone about it, because that's just the way it is. And it's so nice just to put it out there and just to be heard. And for people, I remember I was on a residential in July and I put a tweet out and I just basically said, sitting on a corridor floor, if you know, you know. And anyone that's been in a residential will, and as a teacher, will know what that means.
Yes, absolutely. And I think having those connections and having that language, if you like, the language of stories of the teacher that no one else would get. You probably wouldn't understand that if you're working in banking, and sitting on the corridor floor. Yeah, what's that about? But I'm laughing because I completely understand what you're saying. And I took sixth form, I think. Yeah, I was working in FE, so it was really early on in my career. And we took a group to Euro Disney. And it was a school's convention. So lots of schools went. And we were sharing one of the Disney hotels with another school. As you can imagine, they're sixth form, but there was this other school and in and out of rooms. So we're in the corridors all night on shifts. A good few years later, well, it must have been a good few years, and I've been in secondary and then I went to teacher education. So I was working with a group of students and they were doing PGCE 14 to 19, leisure and tourism. So I was talking about doing residentials as part of their role. They'll do that in that subject. And I was recounting said Euro Disney story about how we were sharing this hotel with this other school. They were from Wales and, they were a nightmare, and they were in and out of the rooms and we had to be in the corridors. And then this hand went up and I just assumed that they were going to make a contribution, ask a question anyway. This guy said, I was in that other school. He was in the other school. He said, I remember. Yes, you were the school from there. He said, I was one of the kids.
Oh, wow.
I didn't
love that.
I could have throttled him. It was a hilarious moment. And you're like, what are the chances? But just so funny. We kept laughing and I said, right, that's it. You and me, we've got some talking to do. But yeah, corridor, nights on corridors, and yeah.
But I think that's the thing, you know, we, each of us has our stories, and other teachers really get it. We've got our own language, as you say, and it's just so nice to, you know, my husband's a truck driver. I'll come home and tell him, you know, the story of the Roman bread from today, and he'll just look at me blankly and go, yeah, and
nice.
But actually, you know, he doesn't necessarily like for example, the other day, I'll tell you this as well, this was really funny. One of my learning support assistants, it was very, very cold outside, and the children were getting ready to go outside. And again, only a teacher would really get this. My learning support assistant said to a child, have you got gloves? And the child said, yes. And I said to my learning support assistant, I think what you need to ask the child is, have you got gloves in school in your locker that you could put on? Mm. And so he did. And the child went, no. And it's those sort of things. You know, if you've been teaching years, you know not to ask a child, have you got gloves? Because they will just say, yes. Have you got a hat? Yes. Mm. But it's those sort of things. And it's like an entirely different language. And that's what I love about connecting with other educators around and about. Because we all get that language. We all understand and we all speak the same language. And it's so lovely to connect with others and go, oh, yeah, yeah, you get me.
Yes, definitely. And I think we don't have that space so much. I mean, there's so many development opportunities for teachers really available, whether they can access them or not. Mm. But actually just making those connections and sharing, I think, so important. And as well, sharing the challenges that you have. Because I think as a teacher, every day you go, you're in the profession for a purpose. You go in and you want to do the best for the children. But all around you is this kind of cage of, I've got to deliver the content, knowing more, remembering more, and all these kind of horrible phrases and you're fighting against that because I just want them to enjoy school, and I want them to enjoy learning, and I want them to grow up to be happy individuals. I can't see knowing more, remembering more, exams and standardized tests in that. And I think that kind of let off and talk around navigating all of that, particularly if you've been doing it a while, and sharing those ideas is really important.
Absolutely.
Because we all feel a bit meh at times, but we need people then to pick us up and say, well, actually, this is how I get away with doing that, or how I get around that. So, yeah, it's brilliant. So tell us a little more. I'm going to ask about your podcast now, as you're on ours. So you started with your hashtag and your Tuesdays, and then that evolved into a podcast. So tell me a little bit more about your podcast, and I'm going to talk about your book as well. But tell us about the podcast first.
So the podcast started in August 2020. Basically, someone said to me, have you ever thought of doing a Tiny Voice Talks podcast? Or it was Tiny Voices podcast. And I was like, no. At that point, I really didn't know what a podcast was. And it didn't, you know, and they said, look, I'll edit it. All you need to do is talk. And I was like, well, I'm sure I could do that. And I put a call out on Twitter, said, I'm starting a podcast. I'm going to be interviewing basically anyone in education that wants to come on and talk about education. That was the only remit. And it was very much people putting themselves forward. It wasn't me going out and searching for guests. It was very much, if you want to come on and talk about your passion, talk about teaching, come and talk to me. And I was amazed at how many people came forward and how many people said, yeah, you know, I'd like to talk about metacognition. I'd like to talk about diversity. I'd like to talk about LGBTQIA+. I'd like to talk about, you know, English, phonics. I've had so many conversations with so many different educators now. And it, in a sense, every episode is like a mini CPD episode, in the sense that it's a mini CPD episode for me, but also for anyone listening to it. I have had utterly profound conversations that have changed my mindset. I have always been very keen on equity, diversity, representation, but wasn't quite sure as a white, heterosexual, middle-aged woman how to approach those conversations, how to learn more. And I've had guests come on the podcast that have really, really helped me to learn and informed me. I've always been passionate about English. I absolutely adore English. Now, John Walker, I've dragged on a couple of times because he came on to talk to me about phonics, but then I actually did drag him back on to talk to me about etymology and morphology because I'm just fascinated about the subject. And then I've had people in the summer, actually just prior to the summer, something went on Twitter about basically mental health and teachers. And we talk about mental health a lot, but sometimes teachers are reluctant to talk about their own mental health because we feel that we are in a profession in which we should be fully together and should not be talking about, you know, mental health and such or difficulties. And I was incredibly grateful. I had a teacher come on and talk about depression. I had someone come on and talk about anxiety, because these are real things that teachers suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone come on and talk about OCD. And so that the podcast, yeah, as I say, it covers a myriad of themes, but it's all about educators learning from educators and educators wanting to share something that's important to them. I love every single guest that I've had on, and I'm incredibly grateful that they've given me their time and they've enabled me to learn so much from them. Really very, very powerful, some of the episodes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I find that, A, it's great CPD. I learned so much, and it's just been wonderful to connect with so many people. But I'm also a podcast fan myself, a convert, probably in the same time as you. It's probably this COVID thing that we've all kind of moved on. Like, I listen to so many podcasts, and I think they're just such a phenomenal form of CPD that you can plug into. You can put it in the car on the way home. Utilize your time really effectively. It doesn't add to your burden. Plug them in when you're walking the dog, and have a listen, and just have a think about, that's an interesting point. Haven't thought of it like that. Lots of little things going through your head, and you can get so many great ideas and perspectives. And so if there's any teachers listening, please do plug into a podcast and have a listen and just see just how much that can change your perspective. It's quite addictive. And I think people don't think of listening to podcasts as CPD, that we're still in a bit of, I went on a course.
Yes, absolutely. Which is,
of course, great if the course is good, but plug into things around as well. And have a listen. There's so much great stuff out there, so much, and lots of great people that are coming on to share their experience. Not necessarily high profile people either, Toya. These are real people doing the real job that aren't, you know.
Yeah, I think CPD,
the names
though,
of education.
I think CPD we often think of as happening in the staff meeting or happening by someone delivering some amazing thing, but actually professional development can happen just from a really decent conversation between two people learning from another individual. And actually that's what I think podcasting is about. It's you're tuning in and you're learning from another individual. The people that are coming on, you know, okay, they're not well known in their field as such, they're not giving high powered speeches, but as you say, they're living and breathing this job day in, day out. They are leading probably on their subject that they're talking about in their school. So they've actually got a wealth of experience. They just don't necessarily have a name or label out there on social media or somewhere else. And I think that was always who I wanted to give voice to. The people in our schools that are doing a phenomenal job, but aren't necessarily known in the way that the big names are.
Yes. And you know, I'm just, as we chat, I'm just hopping on to my LinkedIn because I saw a great Adam Grant quote today and reposted it exactly, which would highlight this perfectly. He says, and it is along the lines of, and you won't, I won't be able to find it now, will I? But nonetheless, it was about listening to the smaller voices. Mm. Don't be overwhelmed by those voices that are the loudest and the most confident. Here he says, we pay too much attention to the most confident voices and too little attention to those most thoughtful ones. So yes. Certainty is not a sign of credibility. Speaking assertively is not a substitute for thinking deeply. So I think that captured it brilliantly. And it is about learning those little conversations. Now, I was then in a car with a friend of mine the other day, who's also a teacher. And she was talking about, we had Nick Owen on the podcast talking about well-being, and she did the how do you spend your time. We say we have mm-hmm. no time, but actually if you think about your last 24 hours, you'll find that you do have time. And that was a good while ago, and we were talking not in the car, and she said, you know, I go back to what Nick Owen says when I say I haven't got time, and it, that little pie chart comes up in my mind. So that little bit nugget of information's really had an impression. So definitely listen to a podcast is what I would say, and see how you find it. And I always think another thing that I, before we move on to your book, head teachers and those organizing CPD use a podcast as a stimulus for a staff meeting. Please have some more stimuli. Instead of just coming into a staff meeting and just launching whatever, send something out to listen to before that then you can talk about in your staff meeting. Introduce staff to things like that. Even if it's a chapter in a book, or, you know, buy the book on Audible or something, give a stimulus.
So many authors go on podcasts to talk about their book. Mm. And actually, I think what's great is that they talk about their book in a shortened half an hour slot as such. So actually they're giving you those really, those golden nuggets, as you said earlier. And that's really useful. If people can listen to that, then they get a better idea about what's going to come. And I really think, you know, as I say, that you're missing a trick if you're not tuning in and really learning from these people, that actually they, you know, so many people want to talk about their passion, which in this case is education.
Yeah, absolutely. So hashtag to podcast to book, and it's a beautiful book. In fact, your logo is lovely.
Thanks.
I love it. And I particularly like Tiny Voices Talk, Education, Engagement, Empowerment, and I think that's wonderful as well. So your book, which I've read and thoroughly enjoyed, so even though I am a long in the tooth educator and been doing it years and years, I had moments where I found myself actually saying out loud yes, or brilliant, or that's a great idea. I found myself saying things out loud. So I'll leave it to you. So how did you make that decision to go from podcast into book, and particularly the style of book? Because this isn't a book that you're going to read from cover, well, you can read it from cover to cover, but it's a book that you can have on your classroom shelf, on your bedside table, and dip in and hear from lots of different people about different elements of education. And that's what I loved.
If I forget to mention time in the book, remind me to say, to talk about the time, because that actually was really what you're saying, that was all in part. How the book came about was a very strange one. So I was presenting a show for Paul Dix on Teach Hug Radio called Origins, and as part of that I was interviewing the bigger voices because I was really interested in their origins. I was really interested how Dame Alison Peacock came to be CEO of Charter College Teaching. I was really interested in how Ian Gilbert came to develop his company Independent Thinking. So I was interviewing Ian Gilbert, and at the end of the interview he said to me, are you Tiny Voices? Because I never told any of the people, the big people as such, how I viewed them. that I did this tiny voice thing. I don't know if they knew, but I never sort of, to me, it was two separate entities. And anyway, and I went, I am. And he said, right, well, do you think there's a book in there? And me being utterly naive, and I'm one of these people that always say yes to everything, I was like, of course there is, yes. And he said, oh, what do you think it will consist of? And I basically threw everything, including the kitchen sink, into this idea of what the book would consist of. And he was like, right, okay. And I then heard from him again saying, look, you know, I've spoken to Crown House. Could you fill in this author questionnaire? So I filled in the author questionnaire, again, throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at it. And then got another email from me, which was, I think we could do the Zoom call just to refine this idea somewhat. So I refined the idea with Ian. By this point, I'd thought quite a lot about what sort of book I would want to create. And I knew that I wanted the book to have two takeaways. I wanted it to have takeaways for the teachers, quick take. I wanted every single chapter to have something that a teacher could take away and use, whether that was knowledge or an actual something practical. I wanted them that to be a takeaway. The second thing was I wanted it to impact on the children in our classrooms. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that it to be a book which would just sit on someone's shelf, be read, and then actually it was too theoretical to actually really transfer to the classroom. Now, the reason it was written the way it's written is that I'm a teacher. I'm a full-time teacher with very little time. So I thought, right, what we'll do is I'll put it in sections, but each section then will have individual chapters. So that, for example, the inclusion section has got a chapter on being a Senko, or, you know, and actually what a Senko does. It's got a chapter on LGBTQIA+. It's got a chapter on racism. It's got a chapter on disability. And I thought, what, you know, if I then put minutes on each chapter for how long it's going to take people to read, then basically what they can do is look and go, oh, I've got 5 minutes. I can read a chapter which is giving me 5 minutes. Because that to me was, I don't have lots of time. So I want to know how long something's going to take. And I always found it really useful when I was looking at blogs that would say, this is going to take you 3 minutes. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, I've got 3 minutes. And I wanted this book to be a dip in, dip out sort of book. I wanted the book to be useful and be, in a sense, rather like a teacher's toolkit. So a toolkit which enabled people to pick up the tool that they needed in that moment, whether they be a student teacher, an early career teacher, whether they are 20 years in, because if you're 20 years in, you have many tools, but some of those tools might need sharpened, and some of those tools may well be new tools that you don't need, know you need yet. And so that's why it was all written the way it was.
Yeah, and that's great, because you can plan that in. And I love the fact that the chapters are short, because 3 minute read. Busy teachers need 3 minute read, not a 30 minute, particularly when you are needing that fix. You've had maybe not such a great day and you're feeling a little bit at sea, or you've been in for your placement review on your first placement and you've come out away with your target. It would be a great point. That would be a great moment in time to pick up this book and then say, okay, I'm going to look through here. What's there that links to the targets that I've just been set? Mm. Your ECT review. But also thinking about those, you know, people that have been teaching for years and years and years, completely agree. Sometimes you just need a bit of a refresher and a boost. But also, there's lots in here that wouldn't have been covered in their teacher education
programs. Absolutely.
You know, how much was covered 20, 30 years ago on inclusion? And how different is it now? So it's about those things that have changed, and you might want to get your head back around them, or that are still fairly emerging as well, that we're not all comfortable with yet.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, if we go back to the point about, you know, our profession being a unified one, actually the authors of the various chapters are from early years right the way up to higher education. And that to me was really important, mm-hmm. There's a chapter in there on the early years, and there's a chapter in there on schemata in maths. And all of them are relevant. And I think, again, it comes back to that point that you were saying about, you know, secondary teachers understanding early years. You read the chapter and you suddenly understand why early years is the way early years is. You read the chapter on schemata in maths and you suddenly understand what secondary maths is looking like. Mm. And it's relevant because we are all working in the same profession. And I think, yeah, that was really important to me, that the book covered the whole age range. But actually, as a teacher who is a primary teacher, every single chapter was still relevant to me. Mm. I might not be practicing what it was saying in the early years, but it's still relevant and it empowers me and develops my understanding and knowledge.
Yeah, it's about where children have come from, where they're going to, what comes next, how we can help smooth the path going forward, mm. how we can learn from what's been before to make the transition into whatever level we're working at easier for them, and make connections with their past, as I say, smooth the path is into the future. So mm. I think that is our role, and sometimes maybe we miss that a little bit and think our role is the now.
Yeah,
I've got this group now, this is what I do year four, and I'm not interested in what went before, and I'm not sure about what's coming up. And I think it is important that we do know. It's really important. We've talked a little bit and touched on, Toria, but we haven't gone too deeply into this, that there are a lot of teachers at the moment. We see them on Twitter. I'm sure we come across them in our own daily practice, that are feeling under pressure. Mm-hmm. So some that are feeling pressures, some that are feeling really quite overwhelmed at the moment. Some are new to teaching, some have been in teaching longer, but there's definite sense within the profession that teachers are finding things quite hard at the moment. What kinds of advice would you give those people?
Firstly, I'm a great advocate for coaching, funnily enough. So I do, if I had my way, every teacher would have coaching, because I think actually coaching is such a powerful tool to figure out what you need to prioritize. I've worked with an awful lot of teachers in my own school on this, basically on workload and looking at what's important, what's not important, what they need to prioritize, how to actually manage what is that endless to-do list. Because I think one of the things that can be really challenging as a new teacher, even as an old teacher, is the fact that your workload never gets to, you know, your to-do list, sorry, never gets to an end. You never get to the point where you're like, oh, I'm done now, I've ticked it all
I'm
off.
Done. I can it's
always being added to. And I think, you know, as I say, coaching, I think, is a really good one. I think there is, but also, and this is, you know, talk to other teachers about what they do to manage their workload. Use the people around you. If we go back to that point you made earlier, teaching can be a very isolating profession because we're teaching on our own. Yeah. But it doesn't need to be isolating with regards to workload. Look at what you can share with others. Mm-hmm. Look at how you can utilize your team. Look at what others are doing to manage their workload. I mean, there are a couple of teachers in my school that are just amazing when it comes to, they've got this whole to-do list thing off pat. I mean, one of them has it on an Excel document, another has it on a different sort of document, but they're absolutely genius at the way they do it. And I think talking is so important. You are not alone. And I would say that one of the things I've learned, actually, again, through coaching, is looking at values and what's important to you. Now, this is linked to your question, tentatively, but linked. I think often we feel most stressed when we're working in places that aren't right for us. Now, every school is different. Identify what's important to you. If what's important to you is what what's important to the school you're working at, actually, there'll be a greater level of comfortability. And workload randomly feels not as pressurized. However, if your values are disconnected with the place you're working in, the level of work, the workload feels worse, the pressure feels more. And actually, I think what's happening a lot of the time is teachers are working in perhaps one school, they're not moving on to another, and they're just feeling, oh my God, I can't do it, because, you know, that one school isn't working for them. But every school is different. And I think, you know, I would say to anyone that walks around the school, a school, and doesn't feel it's right, don't even worry about the interview. Don't do it. No. Because if it doesn't feel right, then actually, as soon as you start working there, it's still not going to feel right. It's not going to suddenly click in and feel right at that point. And I think it's finding the right place, because when you find the right place, you just feel a sense of happiness. You know, I've worked in a number of schools, and I love the school I work in now. I haven't not loved the schools I've worked in before, but I absolutely adore where I work now. It doesn't feel like I'm going into work, if that makes sense. And I don't, and the team that I work in, I absolutely love. It's a strange one. I think it's very much to do with where you are and how you're feeling. And if it doesn't feel right, look around. Does that answer the question, or have I just warbled on about
nothing? I completely agree. I think if you're in a place where you're under some discomfort and there's tension between your values and the values of the school, you will never feel at peace. There will always be a tension, and that will manifest in your own stress and anxieties, because the school are not going to change their values to meet yours. And that's when you need to find somewhere where you feel, I always say, go with your gut when you're going around to school. Yeah. It might look good on paper, but if there's something there that niggles, there's something there that niggles. Doesn't make it a bad school, doesn't make it the right school for you. So I think that's really important. I too am a huge advocate of coaching, and I feel people benefit hugely from coaching conversations and can turn their mindset around and their practice around really, really quickly with engaging with coaching conversations.
Absolutely.
And I would definitely say, if you're a teacher in a school and you're struggling and you really you're in a point where you can't see the wood for the trees, you can't come up with any solutions, seek out a coach, and it will be a worthy investment. Invest in yourself. It is CPD as well. For you, it may be that the school can't fund it, but it would be definitely worth you thinking about whether you can fund it. It's remarkable. And sometimes, you know, I think as a teacher, you know what you should be doing with regards to workload and well-being, but for whatever reason, you can't. So yeah, you know that we should be taking a break at lunchtime and getting some fresh air because that makes us better in the afternoon. We know that. The science says it. The evidence says it. We know we shouldn't be chomping our dinner lunch down at our desk, but we do it. And we can't seem to stop doing it sometimes. It's sort of, we know we shouldn't, we're feeling stressed, but we're still doing it. And sometimes that coach comes in and just kind of cuts straight through that. And I've been coaching someone at the moment who has never taken a lunch break and has found it transformational that she's agreed. She takes 20 minutes. So, you know, slowly. And she goes out for a walk off site to just get a little bit of breath of fresh air, and she says she's so much better already in the office. She's seen an impact. So yeah, absolutely, access coaching is brilliant. If your school offers it, And I would love to see every school become a coaching, have a coaching culture.
Absolutely. And I think what I love about coaching, what I really adore, is that every coachee that comes to me, it's their answers. In a sense, it's great because I don't have to have answers as a coach. I just have to have the right questions and provide the right space and reflect and you know, feedback. I don't need to provide their answers, but you're right. They find their own answers. And, you know, your coachee who takes herself for a walk at lunchtime, that works for her. You know, one of mine the other week designed this. It was something that she needed for her work. She designed it so that it would help her, and it's completely transformed the way she works. Now, that's come completely out of her head, but it's because she was given time and space. And I think often what we lack in school is time, and what coaching gives you is time. And I've had so many conversations with people that say, oh, I don't have time for coaching. But actually, coaching gives you time back.
It does. I've just, the group that I'm working with at the moment, I did sort of say it will create you time.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's amazing.
And just having that scaffold, and I think that's what coaching is. It's a scaffold to explore things. Like you say, you come up with your own answers. And I think that's so much more sustainable, because I could say, well, I do it like this, go and do it like that. It may not work for you. Coming up with your own answers enables the things you put in place to be sustainable. They're yours. You own them. You know how things work. But you've got that scaffold to prod you in the right direction. And to
absolutely.
And yeah, I would absolutely advocate coaching. So we've had a great conversation. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. And I'm going to finish off. And these are difficult questions, I think. And you've achieved so much. And quite frankly, I don't know how you have the time. You're working full time, and your book and your podcast and your teacher hug radio and all of this. What's been your greatest achievement to date, would you say?
So we're talking professionally, because I could give you many, many personal, but I'm just going to go professional. Yeah, I would say that it is my coaching apprenticeship, because I decided to start that last November, so November 2021. And as I say, I've just found out that I've passed the diploma aspect, and I go through Gateway, and then hopefully I'll have completed the apprenticeship end of March. And that for me was that was my greatest achievement, because when I went back into the classroom, I knew I loved teaching, but I really missed supporting other teachers. I really missed it. And I wasn't sure how I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, because the coaching came about because of the podcast, because people would say, oh my goodness, you're really good at listening. And then I was talking to someone about coaching, and I thought, oh, I'd love to do that. Now, financially, I couldn't fund a coaching diploma. I just didn't have the money. And then the apprenticeship levy came about. And for anyone that doesn't know this, if you are working in a school, your school pays into an apprenticeship levy, and you can actually access apprenticeships. Go and speak to your school business manager. And so basically I could do the diploma as long as I did it as an apprenticeship. Now, it's been an immense amount of work. It has meant, you know, and I actually, if I look back at the last year, I genuinely don't know how I have managed to do the apprenticeship alongside full-time teaching, alongside the book, alongside the podcast. I have no clue. I genuinely don't know how I've done it. But actually, to have developed a new school, at what I turned 50 this year. And for me, to have developed this new skill, to have really learnt how to do something at, you know, some people say 50 is young, but for me, you know, it is to have actually gone back to school per se, and actually had to learn how to write very long essays, read lots of stuff, and actually go back into the school. That for me would be my biggest achievement to date, because actually I wanted to learn something new and I was really passionate about doing it.
Great. And the benefits it's going to have for other people as well as you, because in coaching you learn so much again yourself. Is there an ambition that you still wish to achieve, or is it about time you had, you know, some downtime?
I don't know.
Just teach for a year.
What happens to me is if things just develop quite accidentally. So I'm one of these, as I said earlier, I'm one of these people that always says yes to things. You know, I'm hoping that I get to coach more people. I'm hoping that that develops more because I absolutely love it. But I don't know what the future holds. Who knows? You know, and I think, yeah, I just love what I do. And I just want to keep doing what I do. I just want to continue to help children and help adults, really. So who knows what the future holds, really?
Who knows? Who knows? It's been an absolute joy speaking to you, Toria. And as I say, I've been really looking forward to it, and it hasn't disappointed. You can, of course, follow Toria on your on Twitter at Toria Claire.
I am.
C-L-A-I-R-E. And you're on LinkedIn as well.
I am.
You're on Instagram.
I'm on everything. Basically, yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. I've joined TikTok as Tiny Voice Talks, but you're not going to find me on there really, because I have no clue how to use that thing. I've got a Facebook page, and then I've got my website, which is tinyvoicetalks.com. So yeah, and if what I would say to any listener is, if you are a passionate educator but don't feel that your voice is being heard, do get in touch and do come on, because, you know, I love chatting to people about education. So yeah, I will do a plug for guests on your podcast.
Yes, do drop a line. And also the book is out now,
so you is,
and it's, you can get it from all normal booksellers, and if you get a bit lost in that and not sure, it is on the Bowden Education website under our recommended reading. You can click through and get a copy there, and I highly recommend it. And it's not too late to get something out this year for your ECTs that are in your class, and if you're starting teacher education in this coming September, if you're know of someone who is, it's a great little starting gift as well to send people on their way into their ECT year, or great for schools to have for their new ECTs as a little welcome gift. So absolutely get that book, and great for people if you've been teaching 25 years actually to get the book as well. So thank you so much, and I wish you all the best with your continued coaching and all your other endeavors.
Thank you so much. You've been a lovely host. I'm always nervous about coming on other people's podcasts as the guest, so it's just been glorious. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you listeners for listening.
Thank you.